The Monkey Treatment. Kenny Dorchester was a fat man. He had not always been a fat man, of course. He had come into the world a perfectly normal infant of modest weight. But the normalcy was short-lived in Kenny's case, and before very long he had become a chubby-cheeked toddler, well swaddled in baby fat. From then on, it was all downhill and upscale so far as Kenny was concerned. He became a pudgy child, a corpulent adolescent, and a positively porcine college student, all in good turn. And by adulthood, he had left all those intermediate steps behind and graduated into full obesity. People became obese for a variety of reasons, some of them physiological and some psychological. Kenny's reason was relatively simple. Food. Kenny Dorchester loved to eat. Often he would paraphrase Will Rogers, winking broadly, and tell his friends that he had never met a food he didn't like. This was not precisely true, since Kenny loathed both liver and prune juice. Perhaps if his mother had served them more often during his childhood, he would never have attained the girth and gravity that so haunted him at maturity. Unfortunately, Gina Dorchester was more inclined to lasagna and roast turkey with stuffing and sweet potatoes and chocolate pudding and veal cordon bleu and buttered corn on the cob and stacks of blueberry pancakes, although not all in one meal, than she was to liver and prune juice. And once Kenny had professed his preference in the matter by retching his liver back onto his plate, she obligingly never served liver and prune juice again. Thus, all unknowing, she set her son on the soft, suety road to the monkey treatment. But that was long ago, and the poor woman really cannot be blamed, since it was Kenny himself who ate his way there. Kenny loved pepperoni pizza, or plain pizza, or garbage pizza with everything on it, including anchovies. Kenny could eat an entire slab of barbecued ribs, either beef or pork, and the spicier the sauce was, the more he approved. He was fond of rare prime rib and roast chicken and rock Cornish game hens stuffed with rice, and he was hardly the sort to object to a nice sirloin or a platter of fried shrimp or a hunk of kielbasa. He liked his burgers with everything on them, and fries and onion rings on the side, please. There was nothing you could do to his friend the potato that would turn him against it. But he was also partial to pasta and rice, to yams, candied and un, and even to mashed rutabagas. "Desserts are my downfall," he would sometimes say, for he liked sweets of all varieties, especially devil's food cake and cannoli and hot apple pie with whipped cream. "Bread is my downfall," he would say at other times, when it seemed likely that no dessert was forthcoming. And so saying, he would rip off another chunk of sourdough or butter up another crescent roll or reach for another slice of garlic bread, which was a particular vice. Kenny had a lot of particular vices. He thought himself an authority on both fine restaurants and fast food franchises and could discourse endlessly and knowledgeably about either. He relished Greek food and Chinese food and Japanese food and Korean food and German food and Italian food and French food and Indian food, and was always on the lookout for new ethnic groups so he might expand my cultural horizons. When Saigon fell, Kenny speculated about how many of the Vietnamese refugees would be likely to open restaurants. When Kenny traveled, he always made it a point to gorge himself on the area's specialty, and he could tell you the best places to eat in any of 24 major American cities, while reminiscing fondly about the meals he had enjoyed in each of them. His favorite writers were James Beard and Calvin Trellin. "I live a tasty life," Kenny Dorchester would proclaim, beaming. And so he did. But Kenny also had a secret. He did not often think of it and never spoke it, but it was there nonetheless, down at the heart of him, beneath all those great rolls of flesh. And not all his sauces could drown it, nor could his trusty fork keep it at bay. Kenny Dorchester did not like being fat. Kenny was like a man torn between two lovers, for while he loved his food with an abiding passion, he also dreamed of other loves, of women. And he knew that in order to secure the one, he would have to give up the other. And that knowledge was his secret pain. Often he wrestled with the dilemmas posed by his situation. It seemed to Kenny that while it might be preferable to be slender and have a woman than to be fat and have only a crawfish bisque, nonetheless, the latter was not entirely to be spurned. Both were sources of happiness, after all, and the real misery fell to those who gave up the one and failed to obtain the other. Nothing depressed or saddened Kenny so much as the sight of a fat person eating cottage cheese. Such pathetic human beings never seemed to get appreciably skinnier, Kenny thought, and were doomed to go through life bereft of both women and crawfish, a fate too grim to contemplate. Yet, despite all his misgivings, at times the secret pain inside Kenny Dorchester would flare up mightily and fill him with a sense of resolve that made him feel as if anything might be possible. The sight of a particularly beautiful woman, or the word of some new painless and wonderfully effective diet, were particularly prone to trigger what Kenny thought of his aberrations. When such moods came, Kenny would be driven to diet. Over the years, he tried every diet there was, briefly and secretly. He tried Dr. Atkins' diet, and Dr. Stillman's diet, the grapefruit diet, and the brown rice diet. He tried the liquid protein diet, which was truly disgusting. He lived for a week on nothing but Slender and Seago, until he had run through all of the flavors and gotten bored. He joined a pounds-off club and attended a few meetings, until he discovered that the company of fellow dieters did him no good whatsoever, since all they talked about was food. He went on a hunger strike that lasted until he got hungry. He tried the fruit juice diet, and the drinking man's diet, even though he was not a drinking man, and the martinis and whipped cream diet. He omitted the martinis. A hypnotist told him that his favorite foods tasted bad, and he wasn't hungry anyway, but it was a damned lie, and that was that for hypnosis. He had his behavior modified so he put down his fork between bites, used small plates that looked full even with tiny portions, and wrote down everything he ate in a notebook. That left him with stacks of notebooks, a great many small dishes to wash, and unusual manual dexterity in putting down and picking up his fork. His favorite diet was the one that said you could eat all you wanted of your favorite food, so long as you ate nothing but that. The only problem was that Kenny couldn't decide what was really his one true favorite. So he wound up eating ribs for a week, and pizza for a week, and Peking duck for a week. That was an expensive week. And losing no weight whatsoever, though he did have a great time. Most of Kenny Dorchester's aberrations lasted for a week or two. Then, like a man coming out of a fog, he would look around and realize that he was absolutely miserable, losing relatively little weight, and in imminent danger of turning into one of those cottage cheese fatties he so pitied. At that point, he would chuck the diet, go out for a good meal, and be restored to his normal self for another 6 months, until his secret pain surfaced again. Then, one Friday night, he spied Henry Maroney at the Slab. The Slab was Kenny's favorite barbecue joint. It specialized in ribs, charred and meaty, and served dripping with a sauce that Kenny approved of mightily. And on Fridays, the Slab offered all the ribs you could eat for only $15, which was prohibitively high for most people, but a bargain for Kenny, who could eat a great many ribs. On that particular Friday, Kenny had just finished his first slab and was waiting for the second, sipping beer and eating bread, when he chanced to look up and realized with a start that the slim, haggard fellow in the next booth was in fact Henry Maroney. Kenny Dorchester was nonplussed. The last time he had seen Henry Maroney They had both been unhappy Pounds Off members, and Maroney had been the only one in the club who weighed more than Kenny did. A great fat whale of a man, Maroney had carried about the cruel nickname of Bony, as he confessed to his fellow members. Only now the nickname seemed to fit. Not only was Maroney skinny enough to hint at a rib cage under his skin, but the table in front of him was absolutely littered with bones. That was the detail that intrigued Kenny Dorchester. All those bones. He began to count, and he lost track before very long, because all the bones were disordered, strewn about on empty plates in little puddles of drying sauce. But from the sheer mass of them, it was clear that Maroney had put away at least 4 slabs of ribs, maybe 5. It seemed to Kenny Dorchester that Henry Bony Maroney knew the secret. If there was a way to lose hundreds of pounds and still be able to consume 5 slabs of ribs at a sitting, that was something Kenny desperately needed to know. So he rose and walked over to Maroney's booth and squeezed in opposite him. "It is you," he said. Maroney looked up as if he hadn't noticed Kenny until that very second. "Oh," he said in a thin, tired voice. "You." He seemed very weary, but Kenny thought that was probably natural for someone who had lost so much weight. Maroney's eyes were sunk in deep gray hollows. His flesh sagged in pale, empty folds, and he was slouching forward with his elbows on the table as if he were too exhausted to sit up straight. He looked terrible, but he had lost so much weight. "You look wonderful," Kenny blurted. "How did you do it? How? You must tell me, Henry. Really, you must."
"No," Maroney whispered. "No, Kenny. Go away."
Kenny was taken aback. "Really," he declared. "That's not very friendly. I'm not leaving until I know your secret, Henry. You owe it to me. Think of all the times we've broken bread together."
"Oh, Kenny," Maroney said in his faint and terrible voice. "Go. Please go. You don't want to know. It's too.
He stopped in mid-sentence, and a spasm passed across his face. He moaned. His head twisted wildly to the side, as if he were having some kind of a fit, and his hands beat on the table. "Oh," he said. "Henry, what's wrong?" Kenny said, alarmed. He was certain now that Bony Maroney had overdone his diet.
"Oh," Maroney sighed in sudden relief. "Nothing, nothing. I'm fine."
His voice had none of the enthusiasm of his words.
"I'm wonderful, in fact. Wonderful, Kenny. I haven't been so slim since. Why, never. It's a miracle."
He smiled faintly.
"I'll be at my goal soon, and then it will be over. I think I'll be at my goal. Don't know my weight, really."
He put a hand to his brow.
"I am slender, though, truly I am. Don't you think I look good?"
"Yes, yes," Kenny agreed impatiently. "But how? You must tell me. Surely not those Pounds Off phonies."
"No," said Maroney weakly. "No, it was the monkey treatment. Here, I'll write it down for you."
He took out a pencil and scrawled an address on a napkin. Kenny stuffed the napkin into a pocket. "The monkey treatment? I've never heard of that. What is it?" Henry Maroney licked his lips.
"They,"
he started, and then another fit hit him, and his head twitched around grotesquely.
"Go," he said to Kenny. "Just go. It works, Kenny, yes. Oh, the monkey treatment, yes. I can't say more. You have the address. Excuse me.
He placed his hands flat on the table and pushed himself to his feet, then walked over to the cashier, shuffling like a man twice his age. Kenny Dorchester watched him go and decided that Maroney had definitely overdone this monkey treatment, whatever it was. He had never had tics or spasms before, or whatever that had been. "You have to have a sense of proportion about these things," Kenny said stoutly to himself. He patted his pocket to make sure the napkin was still there, resolved that he would handle things more sensibly than Boney Maroney, and returned to his own booth and his second slab of ribs. He ate 4 that night, figuring that if he was going to start a diet tomorrow, he had better get in some eating while the eating was good. The next day being Saturday, Kenny was free to pursue the monkey treatment and the dream of a new, slender him. He rose early and immediately rushed to the bathroom to weigh himself on his digital scale, which he loved dearly because he didn't have to squint down at the numbers, since they lit up nice and bright and precise in red. This morning they lit up as 367. He had gained a few pounds, but he hardly minded. The monkey treatment would strip them off again soon enough. Kenny tried to phone ahead, to make sure this place was open on a Saturday, but that proved to be impossible. Maroney had written nothing but an address, and there was no diet center at that listing in the Yellow Pages, nor a health club, nor a doctor. Kenny looked in the White Pages under monkey, but that yielded nothing. So there was nothing to do but go down there in person. Even that was troublesome. The address was way down by the docks in a singularly unsavory neighborhood, and Kenny had a hard time getting the cab to take him there. He finally got his way by threatening to report the cabbie to the commissioner. Kenny Dorchester knew his rights. Before long, though, he began to have his doubts. The narrow little streets they wound through were filthy and decaying, altogether unappetizing, and it occurred to Kenny that any diet center located down here might offer only dangerous quackery. The block in question was an old commercial strip gone to seed, and it put his hackles up even more. Half the stores were boarded closed, and the rest lurked behind filthy dark windows and iron gates. The cab pulled up in front of an absolutely miserable old brick storefront, flanked by 2 vacant lots full of rubble, its plate glass windows grimed over impenetrably. A faded Coca-Cola sign swung back and forth, groaning above the door. But the number was the number that Boney Maroney had written down. "Here you are," the cabbie said impatiently, as Kenny peered out the taxi window aghast. "This does not look correct," Kenny said. "I will investigate. Kindly wait here until I am certain this is the place." The cabbie nodded, and Kenny slid over and levered himself out of the taxi. He had taken 2 steps when he heard the cab shift gears and pull away from the curb, screeching. He turned and watched in astonishment. "Here, you can't—" he began. But it did. He would most definitely report that man to the commissioner, he decided. But meanwhile he was stranded down here, and it seemed foolish not to proceed when he had come this far. Whether he took the monkey treatment or not, no doubt they would let him use a phone to summon another cab. Kenny screwed up his resolution and went on in the grimy, unmarked storefront. A bell tinkled as he opened the door. It was dark inside. The dust and dirt on the windows kept out nearly all the sunlight, and it took a moment for Kenny's eyes to adjust. When they did, he saw to his horror that he had walked into someone's living room. One of those gypsy families that moved into abandoned stores, he thought. He was standing on a threadbare carpet, and around and about him was a scatter of old furniture. No doubt the best the Salvation Army had to offer. An ancient black-and-white TV set crouched in one corner, staring at him blindly. The room stank of urine. "Sorry," Kenny muttered feebly,
terrified that some dark gypsy youth would come out of the shadows to knife him. "Sorry." He had stepped backwards, groping behind him for the doorknob, when the man came out of the back room. "Ah," the man said, spying Kenny at once from tiny bright eyes. "Ah, the monkey treatment." He rubbed his hands together and grinned. Kenny was terrified. The man was the fattest, grossest human being that Kenny had ever laid eyes on. He had squeezed through the door sideways. He was fatter than Kenny, fatter than Bony Maroney. He literally dripped with fat. And he was repulsive in other ways as well. He had the complexion of a mushroom, and minuscule little eyes almost invisible in rolls of pale flesh. His corpulence seemed to have overwhelmed even his hair, of which he had very little. Bare-chested, he displayed vast areas of folded, bulging skin, and his huge breasts flopped as he came forward quickly and seized Kenny by the arm. "The monkey treatment," he repeated eagerly, pulling Kenny forward. Kenny looked at him in shock and was struck dumb by his grin. When the man grinned, his mouth seemed to become half his face, a grotesque semicircle full of shining white teeth. "No," Kenny said at last. "No, I have changed my mind." Bony Maroney or no, he didn't think he cared to try this monkey treatment if it was administered by such as this. In the first place, it clearly could not be very effective, or else the man would not be so monstrously obese. Besides, it was probably dangerous, some quack potion of monkey hormones or something like that. "No," Kenny repeated more forcefully, trying to wrest his arm free from the grasp of the grotesquerie who held it. But it was useless. The man was distinctly larger and infinitely stronger than Kenny, and he propelled him across the room with ease, oblivious to Kenny's protests, grinning like a maniac all the while. "Fat man," he burbled, and as if to prove his point, he reached out and seized one of Kenny's bulges and twisted it painfully. "Fat, fat, fat, no good. Monkey treatment make you thin." "Yes, but monkey treatment," the man repeated, and somehow he had gotten behind Kenny. He put his weight against Kenny's back and pushed, and Kenny staggered through a curtained doorway into the back room. The smell of urine was much stronger in there, strong enough to make him want to retch. It was pitch black, and from all sides Kenny heard rustlings and scurryings in the darkness. Rats, he thought wildly. Kenny was deathly afraid of rats. He fumbled about and propelled himself toward the square of dim light that marked the curtain he had come through. Before he was quite there, a high-pitched chittering sounded suddenly from behind him, sharp and rapid as fire from a machine gun. Then another voice took it up, then a third, and suddenly the dark was alive with the terrible hammering noise. Kenny put his hands over his ears and staggered through the curtain. But just as he emerged, he felt something brush the back of his neck, something warm and hairy. "Aye!" he screamed, dancing out into the front room, where the tremendous bare-chested madman was waiting patiently. Kenny hopped from one foot to the other, screeching. "Aye! A rat on my back! Get it off! Get it off!" He was trying to grab for it with both hands, but the thing was very quick and shifted around so cleverly so that he couldn't get a hold of it. But he felt it there, alive, moving. "Help me! Help me!" he called out. "A rat!" The proprietor grinned at him and shook his head, so all his many chins went bobbing merrily.
"No, no," he said. "No rat, fat man. Monkey. You get the monkey treatment."
Then he stepped forward and seized Kenny by the elbow again and drew him over to a full-length mirror mounted on the wall. It was so dim in the room that Kenny could scarcely make out anything in the mirror, except that it wasn't wide enough and chopped off both his arms. The man stepped back and yanked a pull cord dangling from the ceiling, and a single bare light bulb clicked on overhead. The bulb swung back and forth, so the light shifted crazily. Kenny Dorchester trembled and stared at the mirror.
"Oh," he said.
There was a monkey on his back. Actually, it was on his shoulders, its legs wrapped around his thick neck and twined together beneath his triple chin. He could feel its monkey hair scratching the back of his neck, could feel its warm little monkey paws lightly grasping his ears. It was a very tiny monkey. As Kenny looked into the mirror, he saw it peek out from behind his head, grinning hugely. It had quick, darting eyes, coarse brown hair, and altogether too many shiny white teeth for Kenny's liking. Its long, prehensile tail swayed about restlessly, like some hairy snake that had grown out of the back of Kenny's skull. Kenny's heart was pounding away like some great air hammer lodged in his chest, and he was altogether distressed by this place, this man, and this monkey. But he gathered all his reserves and forced himself to be calm. It wasn't a rat, after all. The little monkey couldn't harm him. It had to be a trained monkey, the way it had perched on his shoulders. Its owner must let it ride around like this. And when Kenny had come unwillingly through the curtain, it had probably mistook him. All fat men look alike in the dark. Kenny grabbed behind him and tried to pull the monkey loose, but somehow he couldn't seem to get a grip on it. The mirror, reversing everything, just made it worse. He jumped up and down ponderously, shaking the entire room and making the furniture leap around every time he landed. But the monkey held on tight to his ears and could not be dislodged. Finally, with what Kenny thought was incredible aplomb under the circumstances, he turned to the gross proprietor and said,
"Your monkey, sir. Kindly help me remove it."
"No, no," the man said. "Make you skinny. Monkey treatment. You no want to be skinny?"
"Of course I do," Kenny said unhappily, "but this is absurd." He was confused.
This monkey on his back seemed to be part of the monkey treatment, but that certainly didn't make very much sense.
"Go," the man said.
He reached up and snapped off the light with a sharp tug that sent the bulb careening wildly again. Then he started toward Kenny, who backpedaled nervously.
"Go,"
the man repeated as he grabbed Kenny's arm again.
"Out, out. You get monkey treatment. You go now."
"See here," Kenny said furiously. "Let go of me. Get this monkey off me, do you hear? I don't want your monkey, do you hear me? Quit pushing, sir. I tell you I have friends with the police department. You aren't going to get away with this. Here now."
But all his protestations were useless. The man was a veritable tidal wave of sweating, smelling, pale flesh, and he put his weight against Kenny and propelled him helplessly toward the door. The bell rang again as he pulled it open and shoved Kenny out into the garish, bright sunlight.
"I'm not going to pay for this," Kenny said stoutly, staggering. "Not a cent, do you hear?"
"No charge for monkey treatment," the man said, grinning.
"At least let me call a cab,"
Kenny began, but it was too late. The man had closed the door. Kenny stepped forward angrily and tried to yank it back open, but it did not budge. Locked.
"Open up in there,"
Kenny demanded at the top of his lungs. There was no reply. He shouted again and grew suddenly and uncomfortably aware that he was being stared at. Kenny turned around. Across the street, three old winos were sitting on the stoop of a boarded-up store, passing a bottle in a brown paper bag and regarding him through wary eyes. That was when Kenny Dorchester recalled that he was standing there in the street in broad daylight with a monkey on his back. A flush crept up his neck and spread across his cheeks. He felt very silly.
"A pet!"
he shouted to the winos, forcing a smile. Just my little pet.
They went on staring. Kenny gave a last angry look at the locked door and set off down the street, his legs pumping furiously. He had to get to someplace private. Rounding the corner, he came upon a dark, narrow alley behind two gray old tenement buildings and ducked inside, wheezing for breath. He sat down heavily on a trash can, pulled out his handkerchief, and mopped his brow. The monkey shifted just a bit, and Kenny felt it move.
"Off me!"
he shouted, reaching up and back again to try to wrench it off by the scruff of its neck, only to have it elude him once more. He tucked away his handkerchief and groped behind his head with both hands, but he just couldn't get a hold of it. Finally, exhausted, he stopped and tried to think. "The legs," he thought. "The legs under his chins, that's the ticket." Very calmly and deliberately, he reached up and felt for the monkey's legs, and wrapped one big fleshy hand around each of them. He took a deep breath, and then savagely tried to yank them apart, as if they were two ends of a giant wishbone. The monkey attacked him. One hand twisted his right ear painfully until it felt like it was being pulled clean off his head. The other started hammering against his temple, beating a furious tattoo. Kenny Dorchester yelped in distress and let go of the monkey's legs, which he hadn't budged for all his efforts. The monkey quit beating on him and released his ear. Kenny sobbed, half with relief and half with frustration. He felt wretched. He sat there in that filthy alley for ages, defeated in his efforts to remove the monkey and afraid to go back to the street where people would point at him and laugh or make rude, insulting comments under their breath. It was difficult enough going through life as a fat man, Kenny thought. How much worse, then, to face the cruel world as a fat man with a monkey on his back? Kenny did not want to know. He resolved to sit there on that trash can in the dark alley until he died, or the monkey died, rather than face shame and ridicule on the streets. His resolve endured about an hour. Then Kenny Dorchester began to get hungry. Maybe people would laugh at him, but they had always laughed at him, so what did it matter? Kenny rose and dusted himself off, while the monkey settled itself more comfortably on his neck. He ignored it, and decided to go in search of a pepperoni pizza. He did not find one easily. The abysmal slum in which he had been stranded had a surfeit of winos, dangerous-looking teenagers, and burned-out or boarded-up buildings, but it had precious few pizza parlors, nor did it have any taxis. Kenny walked down the main thoroughfare with brisk dignity, looking neither left nor right, heading for safer neighborhoods as fast as his plump little legs could carry him. Twice he came upon phone booths, and eagerly fetched out a coin to summon transportation, but both times the phones proved to be out of order. Vandals, thought Kenny Dorchester, were as bad as rats. Finally, after what seemed like hours of walking, he stumbled upon a sleazy cafe. The lettering on the window said John's Grill, and there was a neon sign about the door that said simply, Eat. Kenny was very familiar with those three lovely letters, and he recognized the sign two blocks off. It called to him like a beacon. Even before he entered, he knew it was rather unlikely that such a place would include pepperoni pizza on its menu, but by this time Kenny had ceased to care. As he pushed the door aside, Kenny experienced a brief moment of apprehension, partially because he felt very out of place in the cafe, where the rest of the diners all appeared to be muggers, and partially because he was afraid they would refuse to serve him because of the monkey on his back. Acutely uncomfortable in the doorway, he moved quickly to a small table in an obscure corner where he hoped to escape the curious stares. A gaunt, gray-haired waitress in a faded pink uniform moved purposefully toward him, and Kenny sat with his eyes downcast, playing nervously with the salt, pepper, and ketchup, dreading the moment when she arrived and said, "Hey, you can't bring that thing in here." But when the waitress reached his table, she simply pulled a pad out of her apron's pocket and stood poised, pencil in hand.
Well,
she demanded,
what'll it be?
Kenny stared up in shock and smiled. He stammered a bit, then recovered himself and ordered a cheese omelet with a double side of bacon, coffee, and a large glass of milk, and cinnamon toast. Do hash browns come with? He asked hopefully, but the waitress shook her head and departed. What a marvelous, kind woman, Kenny thought as he waited for his meal and shredded a paper napkin thoughtfully. What a wonderful place. Why, they hadn't even mentioned his monkey. How very polite of them. The food arrived shortly. Ah, Kenny said as the waitress laid it out in front of him on the formica tabletop. He was ravenous. He selected a slice of cinnamon toast and brought it to his mouth. And a little monkey hand darted out from behind his head and snatched it clean away. Kenny Dorchester sat in numb surprise for an instant, his suddenly empty hand poised before his mouth. He heard the monkey eating his toast, chomping noisily. Then, before Kenny had quite comprehended what was happening, the monkey's great long tail snaked in under his armpit, curled around his glass of milk, and spirited it up and away in the blink of an eye. Hey, Kenny said, but he was much too slow. Behind his back he heard slurping, sucking sounds, and all of a sudden the glass came vaulting over his left shoulder. He caught it before it fell and smashed and set it down unsteadily. The monkey's tail came stealthily around and headed for his bacon. Kenny grabbed up a fork and stabbed at it, but the monkey was faster than he was. The bacon vanished, and the tines of the fork bent against the hard formica uselessly. By then, Kenny knew he was in a race. Dropping the bent fork, he used his spoon to cut off a chunk of the omelet, dripping cheese, and he bent forward as he lifted it, quick as he could. The monkey was quicker. A little hand flashed in from somewhere, and the spoon had only a tantalizing gob of half-melted cheese remaining on it when it reached Kenny's mouth. He lunged back toward his plate and loaded up again, but it didn't matter how fast he tried to be. The monkey had two paws and a tail, and once it even used a little monkey foot to snatch something away from him. In hardly any time at all, Kenny Dorchester's meal was gone. He sat there staring down at the empty, greasy plate, and he felt tears gathering in his eyes. The waitress reappeared without Kenny noticing.
My, you sure are a hungry one,
she said to him, ripping off his check from her pad and putting it in front of him.
Polished that off quicker than anyone I ever saw.
Kenny looked up at her. But I didn't, he protested. The monkey ate it all. The waitress looked at him very oddly.
The monkey?
She said uncertainly. The monkey, Kenny said. He did not care for the way she was staring at him, like he was crazy or something.
What monkey?
She asked.
You didn't sneak no animals in here, did you?
The Board of Health don't allow no animals in here, mister. What do you mean, sneak? Kenny said in annoyance. Why, the monkey is right on me. He never got a chance to finish. Just then the monkey hit him, a tremendous hard blow on the left side of his face. The force of it twisted his head half around, and Kenny yelped in pain and shock. The waitress seemed concerned.
You okay, mister?
She asked.
You ain't gonna have a fit, are you, twitching like that?
I didn't twitch! Kenny all but shouted. The goddamned monkey hit me. Can't you see?
Oh, said the waitress, taking a step backwards. Oh, of course. Your monkey hit you. Pesky little things, ain't they?
Kenny pounded his fists on the table in frustration. Never mind, he said. Just never mind. He snatched up the check. The monkey did not take that away from him, he noted, and rose. Here,
he said, pulling out his wallet. And you have a phone in this place, don't you? Call me a cab, all right? You can do that, can't you?
Sure, the waitress said, moving to the register to ring up his meal. Everyone in the cafe was staring at him.
Sure, mister, she muttered. A cab. We'll get you a cab right away.
Kenny waited, fuming. The cab driver made no comment on his monkey. Instead of going home, he took the cab to his favorite pizza place, 3 blocks from his apartment. Then he stormed right in and ordered a large pepperoni. The monkey ate it all, even when Kenny tried to confuse it by picking up one slice in each hand and moving them simultaneously toward his mouth. Unfortunately, the monkey had 2 hands as well, both of them faster than Kenny's. When the pizza was completely gone, Kenny thought for a moment, summoned over the waitress, and ordered a second. This time he got a large anchovy. He thought that was very clever. Kenny Dorchester had never met anyone else besides himself who liked anchovy pizza. Those little salty fishes would be his salvation, he thought. To increase the odds, when the pizza arrived, Kenny picked up the hot pepper shaker and covered it with enough hot peppers to ignite a major conflagration. Then, feeling confident, he tried to eat a slice. The monkey liked anchovy pizza with lots of hot peppers. Kenny Dorchester almost wept. He went from the pizza place to the slab, from the slab to a fine Greek restaurant, from the Greek restaurant to a local McDonald's, from a McDonald's to a bakery that made the most marvelous chocolate eclairs. Sooner or later, Kenny Dorchester thought, the monkey would be full. It was only a very little monkey, after all. How much food could it eat? He would just keep on ordering food, he resolved, and the monkey would either reach its limit or rupture and die. That day, Kenny spent more than $200 on meals. He got absolutely nothing to eat. The monkey seemed to be a bottomless pit. If it had a capacity, that capacity was surely greater than the capacity of Kenny's wallet. Finally, he was forced to admit defeat. The monkey could not be stuffed into submission. Kenny cast about for another tactic and finally hit on it. Monkeys were stupid, after all. Even invisible monkeys with prodigious appetites. Smiling shyly, Kenny went to a neighborhood supermarket and picked up a box of banana pudding. It seemed appropriate, and a box of rat poison. Humming a spry little tune, he walked on home and set to work making the pudding, stirring in liberal amounts of rat poison as it cooked. The poison was nicely odorless. The pudding smelled wonderful. Kenny poured it into some dessert cups to cool and watched television for an hour or so. Finally, he rose nonchalantly, went to the refrigerator, and got out a pudding and a nice big spoon. He sat back down in front of the set, spooned up a generous glob of pudding, and brought it to his open mouth, where he paused, and paused, and waited. The monkey did nothing. Maybe it was full at last, Kenny thought. He put aside the poisoned pudding and rushed back into his kitchen, where he found a box of vanilla wafers hiding on a shelf, and a few forlorn Fig Newtons as well. The monkey ate all of them. A tear trickled down Kenny's cheek. The monkey would let him have all the poisoned pudding he wanted, it seemed, but nothing else. He reached back half-heartedly and tried to grab the monkey once again, thinking maybe all that eating would have slowed it down some. But it was a vain hope. The monkey evaded him, and when Kenny persisted, the monkey bit his finger. Kenny yowled and snatched his hand back. His finger was bleeding. He sucked on it. That much, at least, the monkey permitted him. When he had washed his finger and wrapped a band-aid around it, Kenny returned to his living room and seated himself heavily, weary and defeated, in front of his television set. An old rerun of The Galloping Gourmet was coming on. He couldn't stand it. He jabbed at his remote control to change the channel and watched blindly for hours, sunk in despair, weeping at the Betty Crocker commercials. Finally, during the Late Late Show, he stirred a little at one of the frequent public service announcements. That was it, he thought. He had to enlist others. He had to get help. He picked up his phone and punched out the crisis line number. The woman who answered sounded kind and sympathetic and very beautiful, and Kenny began to pour out his heart to her, all about the monkey that wouldn't let him eat, about how nobody else seemed to notice the monkey, about... But he had barely gotten his heart pouring going good when the monkey smashed him across the side of the head. Kenny moaned. "What's wrong?" the woman asked. The monkey yanked on his ear. Kenny tried to ignore the pain and keep on talking, but the monkey kept hurting him until finally he shuddered and sobbed and hung up the phone. "This is a nightmare," Kenny thought, "a terrible nightmare." And so thinking, he pushed himself to his feet and staggered off to bed, hoping that everything would be normal in the morning, that the monkey would have been nothing but part of some wretched dream, no doubt brought on by indigestion. The merciless little monkey would not even allow him to sleep properly, Kenny discovered. He was accustomed to sleeping on his back, with his hands folded very primly on his stomach. But when he undressed and tried to assume that position, the monkey fists came raining down on his poor head like some furious hairy hail. The monkey was not about to be squashed between Kenny's bulk and the pillows, it seemed. Kenny squealed with pain and rolled over on his stomach. He was very uncomfortable this way and had difficulty falling asleep, but it was the only way the monkey would leave him alone. The next morning, Kenny Dorchester drifted slowly into wakefulness, his cheek mashed against the pillows, and his right arm still asleep. He was afraid to move. "It was all a dream," he told himself. "There is no monkey." What a silly thing that would be. Monkey, indeed. It was only that Boney Maroney had told him about this monkey treatment, and he had slept on it and had a nightmare. He couldn't feel anything on his back. Not a thing. This was just like any other morning. He opened one bleary eye. His bedroom looked perfectly normal. Still, he was afraid to move. It was very peaceful, lying here like this, monkeyless, and he wanted to savor the feeling. So Kenny lay very still for the longest time, watching the numbers on his digital clock change slowly. Then his stomach growled at him. "There is no monkey," he proclaimed loudly, and he sat up in bed. He felt the monkey shift. Kenny trembled and almost started to weep again, but he controlled himself with an effort. No monkey was going to get the best of Kenny Dorchester, he told himself. Grimacing, he donned his slippers and plodded into the bathroom. The monkey peered out cautiously from behind his head while Kenny was shaving. He glared at it in the bathroom mirror. It seemed to have grown a bit, but this was hardly surprising, considering how much it had eaten yesterday. Kenny toyed with the idea of trying to cut the monkey's throat, but decided that his Norelco electric shaver was not terribly well suited to that end. And even if he used a knife, trying to stab behind his own back while looking in the mirror was a dangerously uncertain proposition. Before leaving the bathroom, Kenny was struck by a whim. He stepped back on his scale. The numbers lit up at once. 367. The same as yesterday, he thought. The monkey weighed nothing. He frowned. No, that had to be wrong. No doubt the little monkey weighed a pound or two, but its weight was offset by whatever poundage Kenny had lost. He had to have lost some weight, he reasoned, since he hadn't been allowed to eat everything for ever so long. He stepped off the scale, then got back on quickly, just to double check. It still read 367. Kenny was certain that he had lost weight.
Perhaps some good would come of his travails after all. The thought made him feel oddly cheerful. Kenny grew even more cheerful at breakfast. For the first time since he had gotten his monkey, he managed to get some food in his mouth. When he arrived at the kitchen, he debated between French toast and bacon and eggs, but only briefly. Then he decided he would never get to taste either. Instead, with a somber fatalism, Kenny fetched down a bowl and filled it with cornflakes and milk. The monkey would probably steal it all anyway, he thought, so there was no sense going to any trouble. Quick as he could, he hurried the spoon to his mouth. The monkey grabbed it away. Kenny had expected it, had known it would happen, but when the monkey hand wrenched the spoon away, he nonetheless felt a sudden and terrible grief. No, he said uselessly. No, no, no. He could hear the cornflakes crunching in that filthy monkey mouth, and he felt milk dropping down the back of his neck. Tears gathered in his eyes as he stared down at the bowl of cornflakes. So near, and yet so far. Then he had an idea. Kenny Dorchester lunged forward and stuck his face right down in the bowl. The monkey twisted his ear and shrieked and pounded on his temple, but Kenny didn't care. He was sucking in milk gleefully and gobbling up as many cornflakes as his mouth could hold. By the time the monkey's tail lashed around angrily and sent the bowl sailing from the table to the floor, Kenny had a huge wet mouthful. His cheeks bulged, and milk dribbled down his chin, and somehow he'd gotten a cornflake up his nostril. But Kenny was in heaven. He chewed and swallowed as fast as he could, almost choking on the food. When it was all gone, he licked his lips and rose triumphantly. "Ha-ha!" he said. "Ha-ha-ha!" He walked back to his bedroom with great dignity and dressed, sneering at the monkey in the full-length bedroom mirror. He had beaten it. In the days and weeks that followed, Kenny Dorchester settled into a new sort of daily routine and an uneasy accommodation with his monkey. It proved easier than he might have imagined, except at mealtimes. When he was not attempting to get food into his mouth, it was almost possible to forget about the monkey entirely. At work, it sat peacefully on his back while Kenny shuffled his papers and made his phone calls. His co-workers either failed to notice the monkey or were sufficiently polite so as not to comment on it. The only difficulty came one day at coffee break, when Kenny foolhardily approached the coffee vendor in an effort to secure a cheese Danish. The monkey ate 9 of them before Kenny could stagger away, and the man insisted that Kenny had done it when his back was turned. Simply by avoiding mirrors, a habit that Kenny Dorchester now began to cultivate as assiduously as any vampire, he was able to keep his mind off the monkey for most of the day. He had only one difficulty, though it occurred thrice daily: breakfast, lunch, and dinner. At those times, the monkey asserted itself forcefully, and Kenny was forced to deal with it. As the weeks passed, he gradually fell into the habit of ordering food that could be served in bowls, so that he might practice what he termed his Kellogg maneuver. By this stratagem, Kenny usually managed to get at least a few mouthfuls to eat each and every day. To be sure, there were problems. People would stare at him rather strangely when he used the Kellogg maneuver in public, and sometimes make rude comments on his table manners. At a chili emporium Kenny liked to frequent, the proprietor assumed he had suffered a heart attack when he dove toward his chili and was very angry with him afterward. On another occasion, a bowl of soup left him with facial burns that made it look as though he was constantly blushing. And the last straw came when he was thrown bodily out of his favorite seafood restaurant in the world simply because he plunged his face into a bowl of crawfish bisque and began sucking it up noisily. Kenny stood in the street and berated them loudly and forcefully, reminding them how much money he had spent there over the years. Thereafter, he ate only at home. Despite the limited success of the Kellogg maneuver, Kenny Dorchester still lost 9/10 of every meal and 10/10 of some to the voracious monkey on his back. At first he was constantly hungry, frequently depressed, and full of schemes for ridding himself of his monkey. The only problem with these schemes was that none of them seemed to work. One Saturday, Kenny went to the monkey house at the zoo, hoping that his monkey might hop off to play with others of its kind, or perhaps go in pursuit of some attractive monkey of the opposite sex. Instead, no sooner had he entered the monkey house than all the monkeys imprisoned therein ran to the bars of their cages and began to chitter and scream and spit and leap up and down madly. His own monkey answered in kind, and when some of the caged monkeys began to throw peanut husks and other bits of garbage, Kenny clapped his hands over his ears and fled. On another occasion, he allowed himself to visit a local saloon and order a number of Boilermakers, a drink he understood to be particularly devastating. His intent was to get his monkey so blind drunk that it might be easily removed. This experiment, too, had rather unfortunate consequences. The monkey drank the Boilermakers as fast as Kenny could order them, but after the third one, it began to keep time to the disco music from the jukebox by beating on the top of Kenny's head. The next morning it was Kenny who woke with the pounding headache. The monkey seemed fine. After a time, Kenny finally put all his scheming aside. Failure had discouraged him, and moreover, the matter seemed somehow less urgent than it had originally. He was seldom hungry after the first week, in fact. Instead, he went through a brief period of weakness, marked by frequent dizzy spells, and then a kind of euphoria settled over him. He felt just wonderful, and even better, he was losing weight. To be sure, it did not show on his scale. Every morning he climbed up on it, and every morning it lit up as 367. But that was only because it was weighing the monkey as well as himself. Kenny knew he was losing. He could almost feel the pounds and inches just melting away, and some of his co-workers in the office remarked on it as well. Kenny owned up to it, beaming. When they asked him how he was doing it, he winked and replied, "The monkey treatment. The mysterious monkey treatment." He said no more than that. The one time he tried to explain, the monkey fetched him such a wallop it almost took his head off, and his friends began to mutter about his strange spasms. Finally, the day came when Kenny had to tell his cleaner to take in all his pants a few inches. That was one of the most delightful tasks of his life, he thought. All the pleasure went right out of the moment. When he exited the store, however, and chanced to glance briefly to his side and see his reflection in the window. At home, Kenny had long since removed all his mirrors, so he was shocked at the sight of his monkey. It had grown. It was a little thing no longer. Now it hunched on his back like some evil, deformed chimpanzee, and its grinning face loomed above his head instead of peering out behind it. The monkey was grossly fat beneath its sparse brown hair, almost as wide as it was tall, and its great long tail drooped all the way to the ground. Kenny stared at it with horror, and it grinned back at him. No wonder he had been having backaches recently, he thought. He walked home slowly, all the jauntiness gone out of his step, trying to think. A few neighborhood dogs followed him up the street, barking at his monkey. Kenny ignored them. He had long since learned that dogs could see his monkey, just like the monkeys at the zoo. He suspected that drunks could see it as well. One man had stared at him for a very long time that night he had visited the saloon. Of course, the fellow might just have been staring at those vanishing Boilermakers. Back in his apartment, Kenny Dorchester stretched out on his couch on his stomach, stuck a pillow underneath his chin, and turned on his television set. He paid no attention to the screen, however. He was trying to figure things out. Even the Pizza Hut commercials were insufficiently distracting, although Kenny did absently mutter, "Ah," like you were supposed to when the slice of pizza, dripping long strands of cheese, was first lifted from the pan. When the show ended, Kenny got up and turned off the set and sat himself down at his dining room table. He found a piece of paper and a stubby little pencil. Very carefully, he block printed a formula across the paper and stared at it. Me plus monkey equals 367 pounds. There were certain disturbing implications in that formula, Kenny thought. The more he considered them, the less he liked them. He was definitely losing weight, to be sure, and that was not to be sneered at. Nonetheless, the grim inflexibility of the formula hinted that most of the gains traditionally attributed to weight loss would never be his to enjoy. No matter how much fat he shed, he would continue to carry around 367 pounds, and the strain on his body would be the same. As for becoming svelte and dashing and attractive to women, how could he even consider it so long as he had his monkey? Kenny thought of how a dinner date might go for him and shuddered. "Where will it end?" he said aloud. The monkey shifted and snickered a vile little snicker. Kenny pursed his lips in firm disapproval. This could not go on, he resolved. He decided to go straight to the source on the morrow, and with that idea planted firmly in his head, he took himself to bed. The next day, after work, Kenny Dorchester returned by cab to the seedy neighborhood where he'd been subjected to the monkey treatment. The storefront was gone. Kenny sat in the back seat of the taxi. This time he had the good sense not to get out, and moreover had tipped the driver handsomely in advance, and blinked in confusion. A tiny, wet, blubbery moan escaped his lips. The address was right, he knew it. He still had the slip of paper that had brought him there in the first place. But where he had found a grimy brick storefront, adorned by a faded Coca-Cola sign, and flanked by two vacant lots, now there was only one large vacant lot, choked with weeds and rubbish and broken bricks. "Oh, no," Kenny said. "Oh, no."
"You okay?" asked the lady driving the cab.
"Yes," Kenny muttered. Just wait, please. I have to think." He held his head in his hands. He feared he was going to develop a splitting headache. Suddenly he felt weak and dizzy, and very hungry. The meter ticked. The cabbie whistled. Kenny thought. The street looked just as he remembered it, except for the missing storefront. It was just as dirty. The old winos were still on their stoop. Kenny rolled down the window.
"You, sir!"
he called out to one of the winos. The man stared at him.
"Come here, sir!"
Kenny yelled. Warily, the old man shuffled across the street. Kenny fetched out a dollar bill from his wallet and pressed it into the man's hand.
"Here, friend," he said. "Go and buy yourself some vintage Thunderbird, if you will."
"Why you giving me this?"
the wino said suspiciously.
"I wish you to answer me a question. What has become of the building that was standing there?"
Kenny pointed. "A few weeks ago?" The man stuffed the dollar into his pocket quickly.
"Ain't been no building there for years," he said.
"I was afraid of that," Kenny said. "Are you certain? I was here in the not-so-distant past, and I distinctly recall..."
"No building,"
the wino said firmly. He turned and walked away. But after a few steps, he paused and glanced back.
"You're one of them fat guys," he said accusingly.
"What do you know about... overweight men?"
"See 'em wandering over there all the time. Crazy, too. Yelling at thin air. Playing with some kind of animals. Yeah, I remember you. You're one of them fat guys, all right."
He scowled at Kenny, confused.
"Looks like you lost some of that blubber, though. Real good. Thanks for the dollar."
Kenny Dorchester watched him return to his stoop and begin conversing animatedly with his colleagues.
With a tremulous sigh, Kenny rolled up the window, glanced at the empty lot again, and bid his driver take him home. Him and his monkey, that is. Weeks went dripping by, and Kenny Dorchester lived as if in a trance. He went to work, shuffled his papers, mumbled pleasantries to his co-workers, struggled and schemed for his meager mouthfuls of food, avoided mirrors. The scale read 367. His flesh melted away from him at a precipitous rate. He developed slack, droopy jowls, and his skin sagged all about his middle, looking as flaccid and pitiful as a used condom. He began to have fainting spells brought on by hunger. At times he staggered and lurched about the street, his thinning and weakened legs unable to support the weight of his growing monkey. His vision got blurry. Once he even thought that his hair had started to fall out, but that at least was a false alarm. It was the monkey who was losing hair, thank goodness. It shed all over the place, ruining his furniture, and even daily vacuuming didn't seem to help much. Soon Kenny stopped trying to clean up. He lacked energy. He lacked energy for just about everything, in fact. Rising from a chair was a major undertaking. Cooking dinner was impossible torment. But he did that, anyway, since the monkey beat him severely when it was not fed. Nothing seemed to matter very much to Kenny Dorchester. Nothing but the terrible tale of his scale each morning, and the formula that he had scotch-taped to his bathroom wall. Me plus monkey equals 367 pounds. He wondered how much was me anymore, and how much was monkey, but he did not really want to find out. One day, following the dictates of a kind of feeble whim, Kenny made a sudden grab for the monkey's legs under his chin, hoping against hope that it had gotten slow and obese and that he would be able to yank it from his back. His hands closed on nothing, on his own pale flesh. The monkey's legs did not seem to be there, though Kenny could still feel its awful, crushing weight. He patted his neck and breast in dim confusion, staring down at himself and noting absently that he could see his feet. He wondered how long that had been true. They seemed to be perfectly nice feet, Kenny Dorchester thought, although the legs to which they were attached were alarmingly gaunt. Slowly, his mind wandered back to the quandary at hand. What had become of the monkey's legs? Kenny frowned and puzzled and tried to work it all out in his head, but nothing occurred to him. Finally, he slid his newly rediscovered feet into a pair of bed slippers and shuffled to the closet where he had stored all of his mirrors. Closing his eyes, he reached in, fumbled about, and found the full-length mirror that had once hung on his bedroom wall. It was a large, wide mirror. Working entirely by touch, Kenny fetched it out, carried it a few feet, and painstakingly propped it up against a wall. Then he held his breath and opened his eyes. There in the mirror stood a gaunt, gray, skeletal-looking fellow, hunched over and sickly. On his back, grinning, was a thing the size of a gorilla, a very obese gorilla. It had a long, pale, snake-like tail, and great long arms, and it was as white as a maggot and entirely hairless. It had no legs. It was attached to him now, growing right out of his back. Its grin was terrible and filled up half of its face. It looked very like the gross proprietor of the Monkey Treatment Emporium, in fact. Why had he never noticed that before? Of course. Of course. Kenny Dorchester turned from the mirror and cooked the monkey a big, rich dinner before going to bed. That night he dreamed of how it had all started, back in the slab when he had met Boney Maroney. In his nightmare, a great evil white thing rode atop Moroni's shoulders, eating slab after slab of ribs. But Kenny politely pretended not to notice, while he and Boney made bright, sprightly conversation. Then the thing ran out of ribs, so it reached down and lifted one of Boney's arms and began to eat his hand. The bones crunched nicely, and Moroni kept right on talking. The creature had eaten its way up to the elbow when Kenny woke screaming, covered with a cold sweat. He had wet his bed, too. Agonizingly, he pushed himself up and staggered to the toilet, where he dry-heaved for 10 minutes. The monkey, angry at being wakened, gave him a desultory slap from time to time. And then a furtive light came into Kenny Dorchester's eyes. "Boney," he whispered. Hurriedly, he scrambled back to his bedroom on hands and knees, rose, and threw on some clothes. It was 3 in the morning, but Kenny knew there was no time to waste. He looked up an address in the phone book and called a cab. Boney Moroni lived in a tall, modern high-rise by the river, with moonlight shining brightly off its silver-mirrored flanks. When Kenny staggered in, he found the doorman asleep at his station, which was just as well. Kenny tiptoed past him to the elevators and rode up to the 8th floor. The monkey on his back had begun stirring now, and seemed uneasy and ill-tempered. Kenny's finger trembled as he pushed the round black button set in the door to Moroni's apartment, just beneath the eyehole. Musical chimes sounded loudly within, startling in the morning stillness. Kenny leaned on the button. The music played on and on. Finally, he heard footsteps, heavy and threatening. The peephole opened and closed again. Then the door swung open. The apartment was black, though the far wall was made entirely of glass, so the moonlight illuminated the darkness softly. Outlined against the stars and the light of the city stood the man who had opened the door. He was hugely, obscenely fat, and his skin was a pasty, fungoid white, and he had little dark eyes set deep into crinkles in his broad, suety face. He wore nothing but a vast pair of striped shorts. His breasts flopped about against his chest when he shifted his weight, and when he smiled, his teeth filled up half his face, a great crescent moon of teeth. He smiled when he saw Kenny and Kenny's monkey. Kenny felt sick. The thing in the door weighed twice as much as the one on his back. Kenny trembled.
"Where is he?"
he whispered softly.
"Where is Boney? What have you done to him?"
The creature laughed, and its pendulous breasts flounced about wildly as it shook with mirth. The monkey on Kenny's back began to laugh too, a higher, thinner laughter, as sharp as the edge of a knife. It reached down and twisted Kenny's ear cruelly. Suddenly, a vast fear and a vast anger filled Kenny Dorchester. He summoned all the strength left in his wasted body and pushed forward, and somehow he barged past the obese colossus who barred his way and staggered into the interior of the apartment.
"Boney," he called. "Where are you, Boney? It's me, Kenny."
There was no answer. Kenny went from room to room. The apartment was filthy, a shambles. There was no sign of Boney Moroni anywhere. When Kenny came panting back to the living room, the monkey shifted abruptly and threw him off balance. He stumbled and fell hard. Pain went shooting up through his knees. and he cut open one outstretched hand on the edge of the chrome and glass coffee table. Kenny began to weep. He heard the door close, and the thing that lived here moved slowly toward him. Kenny blinked back tears and stared at the approach of those two mammoth legs, pale in the moonlight, sagging all around with fat. He looked up, and it was like gazing up the side of a mountain. Far, far above him grinned those horrible, mocking teeth.
"Where is he?" Kenny Dorchester whispered. "What have you done with poor Boney?"
The grin did not change. The thing reached down a meaty hand, fingers as thick as a length of kielbasa, and snagged the waistband of the baggy striped shorts. It pulled them down clumsily, and they settled to the ground like a parachute, bunching around its feet.
"Oh, no," said Kenny Dorchester.
The thing had no genitals. Hanging down between its legs, almost touching the carpet, now that it had been freed from the confines of the soiled shorts, was a wrinkled, droopy bag of skin, long and gaunt, growing from the creature's crotch. But as Kenny stared at it in horror, it thrashed feebly and stirred, and the loose folds of flesh separated briefly into tiny arms and legs. Then it opened its eyes. Kenny Dorchester screamed, and suddenly he was back on his feet, lurching away from the grinning obscenity in the center of the room. Between its legs, the thing that had been Boney Maroney raised its pitiful, stick-thin arms in supplication.
"Oh, no,"
Kenny moaned, blubbering, and he danced about wildly, the vast weight of his monkey heavy on his back. Round and round he danced in the dimness, in the moonlight, searching for an escape from this madness. Beyond the plate glass wall, the lights of the city beckoned. Kenny paused and panted and stared at them. Somehow the monkey must have known what he was thinking, for suddenly it began to beat on him wildly, to twist his ears, to rain savage blows all around his head. But Kenny Dorchester paid no mind. With a smile that was almost beatific, he gathered the last of his strength and rushed pell-mell toward the moonlight. The glass shattered into a million glittering shards, and Kenny smiled all the way down. It was the smell that told him he was still alive, the smell of disinfectant and the feel of starched sheets beneath him. A hospital, he thought, amidst a haze of pain. He was in a hospital. Kenny wanted to cry. Why hadn't he died? Oh, why? Oh, why? He opened his eyes and tried to say something. Suddenly a nurse was there, standing over him, feeling his brow and looking down with concern. Kenny wanted to beg her to kill him, but the words would not come. She went away, and when she came back, she had others with her. A chubby young man said, "You'll be all right, Mr. Dorchester, but you have a long way to go. You're in a hospital. You're a very lucky man. You fell 8 stories. You ought to be dead." "I want to be dead," Kenny thought, and he shaped the words very, very carefully with his mouth, but no one seemed to hear them. "Maybe the monkey has taken over," he thought. "Maybe I can't even talk anymore."
"He wants to say something," the nurse said.
"I can see that," said the chubby young doctor. "Mr. Dorchester, please don't strain yourself. Really, if you were trying to ask about your friend,
I'm afraid he wasn't as lucky as you. He was killed by the fall. You would have died as well, but fortunately you landed on top of him.
Kenny's fear and confusion must have been obvious, for the nurse put a gentle hand on his arm.
The other man,
she said patiently.
The fat one. You can thank God he was so fat, too. He broke your fall like a giant pillow.
And finally, Kenny Dorchester understood what they were saying and began to weep. But now he was weeping for joy and trembling. 3 days later, he managed his first word.
Pizza,
he said, and it came weak and hoarse from between his lips, and then louder still, and before long he was pushing the nurse's call button and shouting and pushing and shouting.
Pizza! 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 Pizza!
He chanted, and he would not be calm until they ordered one for him. Nothing had ever tasted so good.